In the Warren County Radio Bible School today, we're going to read from the Rockcliffe Review. I'm going to look at two readings from two of the old bulletins that we pass out at the church at Rockcliffe, and this is one comes from Psalm 119. And we sing a song about this one. How shall the young secure their hearts? The title of this article is the title of a song I remember singing at youth rallies. It was one of those songs that were easy for me to sing without really thinking about it. The answer to the question raised in the title in the opening line is found in the first verse of Psalm 109, or of the song, Thy Word is the word that secures, protects our hearts, and guards our lives from sin. The song was inspired by Psalm 119. The question asked in verse 9, Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? Their answer is in the same verse, By taking heed thereto according to thy word. There it is again, Thy word. And it goes on to say in verse 11, Thy word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against thee. It keeps the conscience clean. The song continues to draw from the 119th Psalm in the second verse, saying, 'Tis like the sun, a heavenly light that guides us all the way, and through the dangers of the night, a lamp to lead our way. This echoes the thoughts of Psalm 119:105. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet, and a light unto my path. Because the psalm begins with the young, I assume it was a song for the young people. It is, but it does not stop there. That holy book shall guide our youth, and well support our age, and well support our age, and well support our age. Consider Psalm 119:52, concerning thy testimonies. I have known of old that thou hast founded them forever. The Bible is the best guidebook ever written for the young, and the older we grow, the better it gets. That's why we have the Warren County Radio Bible School, because of our love and understanding of the importance of Bible teaching. Here's another one that was an article that was inspired by me, or I was prompted to write about the showers, about the 119th Psalm. It's Psalm 119:17, where the psalmist says, Deal bountifully with thy servant, that I may live and keep thy word. And there's another song we sing, Showers of Blessings. The showers, mercy drops round us are falling, but for the showers we plead. The title of this article is, But for the Showers We Plead. It's hard to be satisfied. It seems like we always think we would have enough if we had a little more. Mercy drops wet our taste for showers of blessings. If we love money, the showers will also fail to satisfy. The happiness of contentment is better than the abundance of riches. Godliness with contentment is great gain, 1 Timothy 6:6. I remember a good, prosperous man telling me one time, Money will not make you happy. It will let you drive around in a Cadillac looking for happiness, but it will not make you happy. It reminded me of the young man that went away sorrowfully because he had great possessions, Matthew 19:22. In 1 Chronicles 4:10, Jabez calls on the God of Israel, saying, Oh, that thou wouldest bless me, indeed. And God granted him that for which he requested. It is no sin to be rich. But when an abundance of blessings comes, an abundance of responsibility, and an abundance of spiritual hazards, God knows when an abundance of material blessings can turn into a curse. It is God's joy to bless us. But he is careful with material blessings above that which is sufficient. And besides, we often ask amiss. Ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask not, and receive not, because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lust. James 4:2-3. In Proverbs 30, verses 8 through 9, the wise man prayed, Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, Who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. In Psalm 119, in verse 17, the psalmist asks for God's bounty. Deal bountifully with thy servant, that I may live and keep thy word. There are three things to notice about this prayer for blessings. One, the psalmist recognizes that he is God's servant. He's not asking for an abundance to satisfy his lust, but resources to be of service. Two, the psalmist wants to live. He can be of service if he lives. Paul says in Philippians 1:21-25, For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I live in the flesh, this is the fruit of my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I want not. For I'm in a strait betwixt the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Neither to abide in the flesh is more needful for you. And having this confidence, I know that I shall abide and continue with you by my coming to you again. Number three, the psalmist had the desire and intention to keep God's word. In the hands of the godly, an abundance of riches is a blessing both to them and to those who are blessed by them. But rich or poor, we must resolve to keep God's word. Solomon was blessed with great riches. He learned that they were vanity. And in the end, he said, Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Now we read from the Rockcliffe Review, because the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rockcliffe, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And in this old Bible school, we're studying old Sunday school lessons. And here's a lesson about Elijah at Mount Carmel for the Sunday schools of October the 2nd, 1927, prepared by E.A. Elam. We read in 1 Kings 18 in verse 30, Elijah said unto all the people, Come near unto me. And all the people came near unto him, and he repaired the altar of Jehovah that was thrown down. This was after all the loud crying and wild gesticulations and frenzied bodily affections of the prophets of Baal for about 9 hours that had most singly failed. Elijah, full of faith in Jehovah and confidence which such faith inspires, called the people to him, that they might see the fairness of the whole matter. He wanted them, too, to be witness of the result of this test. And he repaired the altar of Jehovah that was thrown down. The altar of Jehovah was probably built before the erection of the temple at Jerusalem. The altar had been thrown down by the enemies of Jehovah. This Elijah first repaired, that his offering might be made on an altar consecrated and acceptable to God. Our service today must be rendered in a manner acceptable to God. Elijah honored God in repairing his altar and obeying his commands, and we can honor God now only as we conform to his way. We read in 1 Kings 18:31, "And Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto whom the word of the Lord of Jehovah came, saying, Israel shall be thy name." Elijah took not 10, but 12 stones, according to the 12 tribes of Israel. God was called the God of Israel after the 10 tribes revolted to show that he was still their God if they would serve him faithfully. Jacob was still the father of all the 12 tribes. The name Jacob had been changed to Israel. Jacob had been blessed by clinging to Jehovah in prayer, and Elijah was about to pray to him. This altar was represented the whole nation, not some division of it. We read in 1 Kings 18 in verse 32, "And with the stones he built an altar in the name of Jehovah, and he made a trench about the altar as great as would contain 2 measures of seed." Well, Elijah was there by God's command, and this altar was built by his authority to the honor of his name, and was entrusted to his care and protection to avoid the barest possibility of any charge of deception. The trench was made about the altar to be filled with water, as great as would contain 2 measures of seed, or, as the margin says, a 2 shiah measure that is deep and wide enough for such a measure to sit in it. The measure contained 2 or 3 gallons. We read in verses 33 through 35, "And he put wood in order, and cut the bullock in pieces, and laid it on the wood. And he said, Fill 4 jars with water, and pour it on the burnt offering, and on the wood. And he said, Do it the second time. And they did it the second time. And he said, Do it the third time. And they did it the third time. And the water ran around the altar, and he filled the brook also with, and he filled the trench also with water." Now, the altar erected, and the trench dug. The wood was then put on the altar, and the bullock was cut in pieces and laid on the wood. This done, Elijah then directed the 4 jars of water to be poured on the burnt offering on the wood. These jars were such as maidens used to carry water upon their heads, and would hold about 3 gallons. 12 jars of water were poured on. 36 gallons of water in all were poured on. The water thoroughly saturated the sacrifice, and the wood running all through them and all over the altar, and it filled the trench. This was done to show that there was no fire concealed about the altar, and to preclude any possibility and any thought of deception. In verse 36 we read, "It came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening oblation, that Elijah the prophet came near and said, O Jehovah, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word." Well, Elijah not only built the altar according to God's directions, but the offering was made at the time of the evening sacrifice was offered to God. Everything was done in strict compliance with God's law. So we must now implicitly obey God in observing his order. Then Elijah addressed God as he frequently called him, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob. God promised to bless the descendants of these faithful men when these descendants were likewise faithful. And as the descendants of these men, Elijah and the people then addressed God. Elijah wanted them near, that as much as possible this might be their prayer as well as his.